Hello, everybody. I've been asked to do a little video for my 63rd anniversary, and I'm very happy to do it. It will be a relaxed talk, so you might as well just sit back and fold your arms or whatever, if you feel like folding, and I'll just talk. We just came back, a group of us, from Sorrento last night. We were on vacation there. It was great fun. I went to Capri, and people couldn't believe it when I told people that I had been there the first time in 1933. I was 7 years old. It's been a long life, and I'm very grateful for it. So many things have happened. It's been a dramatic life in many ways, but this is my 63rd year of discipleship to Master. God has guided me all this way. Sometimes I've stumbled. I remember a vision that Daniel Boone had. He was given to visions. It was very interesting. He fell from the path, but he had enough good karma to try to hold him onto it. And in one of these visions, he saw the disciples all running. Master was in a big light, and there were disciples running toward it. And he said sometimes somebody would stumble and fall, and sometimes it would take them a little while to get up. And I said, did they all fall? He said, oh, yes, they all stumbled and fell, but they'd get up and they'd just walk a little and start to run again. He said, four people went into the light. And I was very happy that I was one of those four. It was like a painting that I did when I was 12. And it was four people going into a light. Same idea, some sort of a strange something or other in my life that has done that. My earthly family was not really my family, and yet it was my family. There's a bond there. But God has, when I wanted God, he took me from that. Even at the age of 9, he sent me away from there. It was very difficult. I was 9 years old. That's not an easy age to be sent to another country. I didn't speak French, but I had to be sent there for my health. And I've been weaned in that way from a family life. Then I had to be weaned from SRF. And I don't think I'll have to be weaned from my own little family here. But my earthly family, I love them. They're fine people. I've been grateful. Except for one cousin who was not such a good person. I guess every family has to have its black sheep. All of them have been noble people, and I'm grateful for them. I would love to have had them follow me on the path. They have not. One or two are starting to come in this direction. That's fine. But I remember what Master used to say. He'd quote Jesus, who is my father and mother and brother and sister, but those who love God. My brother Dick, a wonderful man. He's had his success in the world, and I'm proud of him and grateful for it. But I've tried to show him how it just makes so much sense to seek God. And he said it may be very fine, but I'm just not interested. And he's seeking God in his way. And my brother Bob, he always had an intense sense of rivalry with me. I remember when we were 12, I was 12, he was 10, and we were in Holland living for a month in The Hague. And I remember a song he sang to me one day. It was a pretty nice song, actually. Donald, dear, is it quite clear that I have won the day, that I have won the day? So don't you realize that I have won the prize? Oh, Donald, dear, is it quite clear that I have won the day, that I have won the day? And so it went all our lives, but we loved each other in our way. And he was loyal to me when people attacked me, and I'm grateful for him. He didn't have any interest in philosophy. When I was sitting at a party one time, I had a bottle of water, which I had ice in and let people think it was gin. It was a cocktail party, and I was sitting talking with somebody. He came over and said, what are you talking about? And I said, about philosophy. Philosophy, yuck! And he went like that. So anyway, you're given the family that God gives you, but they're noble people. And I would like very much someday to see that my life, it is said in the Indian tradition that when one member of a family gives his life to God, I'm not interested in familial things. That's why I couldn't remain married to Rosanna. She wanted me to think of her. I was interested in serving Master. I didn't want to serve her. And that's what my whole life has been dedicated for. I can't help it. You can call me just a slave of my own karma if you like, but that's just the way I'm made. Anyway, I know my dad didn't really approve of my being on this path. I remember one time I was found to have blood pressure of a 200 over 120, and I could easily have died of a stroke or a heart attack or something, and the doctors told me I just had to take a rest, and I decided I'd try to go on a cruise in the Caribbean and just do nothing for a while. So I asked Dad to help me, and all he said was, "Don, you've just got to stop giving away all your money." Well, I can't help it. It's not my money. Anyway, I got to go on the cruise. Other people helped me, and it did help my blood pressure. And here you are, still stuck with me. I'm 85. My parents died before this age. My grandparents died before this age. I should have died before this age. But I told God when I was just ready to go, and I could feel myself slipping away. And I said, "God, if you want me to stay, I'll stay. If you want me to help your work, if you don't, I'll go. I don't care. I'm happy to go any time." Suddenly, in just a few minutes, I became well. And now I've had a prediction that says I'll live to be 91. Who knows? I don't really care. But it's all so interesting to look back over one's life. When my time came to find God, and I had never told my mother that. You know, it's strange, because even when she carried me in her womb, she kept praying to God, "This first child I give to God." And I never talked about my desire for God. When an aunt of mine, Aunt Aline, came to see us in New York State, she said, "I bet Don ends up in a seminary and mothers at home, not Don." But all the time I was thinking, how can I find God? How can I find God? And my father was sent by God to Egypt. The day I put my mother on the ship was the day I went uptown New York and found Autobiography of a Yogi. It completely changed my life. And as I crossed the country, my one desire was to find God and to help everybody to find him. And that has been my motivation all my life. I've really had no other motivation. So I must admit, I'm envious of those people whose families do come with them onto the path, but I'm grateful for what I have. I've had to stand alone in this life. Even my family at SRF, I remember how I just embraced SRF and Mount Washington and the life there so absolutely gleefully. I was just laughing day after day. This was finally what I'd been looking for, and then they had to throw me out. Only because I really wanted to spread Master's work, and they thought, "What has he got in his inside him that makes him keep wanting to do things? Why can't he just wait and be told what to do?" Well, I'm just not made that way. 49 years ago, I had trouble with my started with my family, spiritual family. I tried to build the work in New Delhi, and they decided that I was just in it for my ego and megalomania and so on. I don't know why they talk about megalomania. Thank God Master told me many times, "You have a great work to do." In 1949, he said in public at the meditation, "Walter, you must try hard, for God will bless you very much." And he said one time, "Every man except St. Lynn has disappointed me, and you mustn't disappoint me." I knew what he meant was not that he didn't have spiritual men disciples, but men's energy is outward, women's energy is inward. I was the only man on the board of directors. I was the only man there doing something. I wanted the world to know about it, and they just thought it must mean that I had ants in my pants or something. I don't know. It was a very peculiar situation for me. We just couldn't see the world through the same colored glasses, I guess. So anyway, I got in trouble with them, and they threw me out. And it was, as you know, a very painful scene, but I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful because it freed me to do the things that Master himself had told me he wanted me to do. And he did not tell me you must follow Daya. He told me I had things to do of my own. He told me I had books to write. I said, haven't you written everything that's needed? He said, don't say that. Much more is needed. He said he wanted me to edit and to lecture while I was lecturing already. But I've had to have a completely new take. You know, it's a very interesting thing. When I first heard him talk about William the Conqueror and having been William the Conqueror in a former lifetime, I didn't really cotton to that one very well because I'd been brought up in the English system. And I'd always learned to think of William the Conqueror as one of history's great villains. But I certainly made an effort to study his life. And in fact, Catherine Kyrevy, I asked her to write a history of his life, and she dedicated 10 years of intense research, and it's a wonderful book, Two Souls, Four Lives. It's a great book. But it came to me one time that I was his son Henry, and her book makes a very strong case for my having been he. Well, in his case, too, there was the battle of... His father gave Normandy to Robert Curthose, England to William Rufus, and to Henry, he gave a whole bunch of silver. And Henry said to him, but what am I to do with this silver? I have nothing to spend it on. He could have made him an earl, a duke, or something. He didn't. And on his deathbed, Henry said to him, but what am I to do with this money? And William said to him on his deathbed, don't feel too badly. Someday you will get both of these. And in fact, that's how it happened. And in the end, Robert in Normandy decided to try to destroy Henry again. And Henry came in and beat him at the Battle of Tonchebrai. And from then on, he had both Normandy and England. I have sometimes wondered, this year I am coming out very shortly now with the biography of Yogananda and Restoring the Legacy. Let's see what that does. I really think something might happen. If it doesn't, I don't care. But I would love to see Master's work united, and I would like to see united in his spirit, as I don't feel it is right now. I feel that they've gone astray, as you will see in that book, Rescuing His Spiritual Legacy, that I feel that they've gone away from it in many very important ways. Well, just a minute, I want to go. I've got my notes here, and I'd like to read these notes, but I don't seem to have them quite in order. And never mind, this is a very informal talk, so just bear with me. Yes, like the beginning of that movie, Affair to Remember, where they have this man in England on the BCC, and there you have it. So anyway, 49 years ago, I began Ananda. Tara had a massive stroke that year, and 2 years later she died. But 42 years ago, we had our dedication on the 4th of July. Ananda's been around a long time ago. I'll be having a launch in Rome next weekend. 40 years ago, the launch will be for my book in Italian on education for life. 40 years ago, we had our first school we began, Education for Life School. 30 years ago, I wrote my first and published my first book, my book, Education for Life, which is now coming out in Italian. I've written 150 books. I admit that's cheating a bit, but you know, when we submitted the 26 lessons on success and happiness, The copyright office demanded that we got a copyright for each of those 26 lessons. So I said, okay, well, then we'll call each one a book. So if you accept that little fudging, it's about 150 books, and I haven't counted exactly. It's just more fun than anything else. I've written over 400 pieces of music. You know, it's interesting. Master said that he was also a ruler in Spain who helped to drive the Moors out of Spain. And Jayadev, one of our members here in Italy. By the way, the scene behind you is from my house here in Italy. And Jayadev did research and found that it must have been Fernando III of Castile León. And I believe I was his son Alfonso. Alfonso also wrote 400 pieces of music, over 400. And there are many ties in. It's a very interesting thing. It's more fun than anything else, I suppose. But anyway, I've written 400 pieces of music, more than that. And I think that they have done some good in this world. It's a different kind of music. Not classical, not popular, not anything. But I believe that it will help to change people's lives. I've taken 15,000 art photos. I've had TV and radio programs to millions and millions of people, and I'm just doing none now that will go out to English-speaking countries all over the world. And I've had a fulfilled life, and I'm very grateful for it. But I don't really feel I've done anything. It rests very lightly on my shoulders. I feel I'm just a little child, sort of wandering around looking at this beautiful museum, which is this world. Last year, Agastya, I went to that reading that was supposed to have been written 5,000 years ago, and it told me I would be making movies. Okay, so I'm making movies. It seems like there are three in the works right now. And this last one that I would love to see done that isn't in the works yet is The Time Tunnel. I think you all will love that book when it comes out. It's something I wrote in 2 weeks, but it's children going forward and backward in time. It's a fantasy, but it teaches deep teachings in a deep way, but in a simple, childlike way. Henry was this way too, Henry I. He was not an orator. He liked to just talk, and that's how I like to talk. And sometimes I tell jokes, and I don't mind just breaking in and going off the subject and wandering back, but it somehow seems to work. It's been a dramatic life in many ways. I've come close to dying many times. I've had operations that have practically made me a medical marvel. But here I am, still chugging along like the little train that thought it could. And, you know, the one that was coming up the slope, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, I thought I could, I thought I could, I thought I could, like that. And so in this life, I'm grateful for everything. I've had ups and downs. I've had people turning against me. I've had people hating me. I've had people loving me. I've been expelled by one family. When my brothers got married, I did feel very badly for that. That my Daya wouldn't let me go for the wedding. It didn't seem right to me. But I had to be obedient and I had to be loyal. And so I didn't let them know that I hadn't been allowed to go back. So, dear brother, if you remember that occasion, then forgive me for that. Anyway, the struggles have been worth every bit of it. I got a letter. I sometimes get these little mash letters from people who tell me that there's no hope for me spiritually. I got one recently telling me that I was doomed for several incarnations, and just the other day while I was on vacation, I got a letter saying, what about your Swami vows and so on? So I wrote a letter in answer to that person, and I thought maybe I would read what I wrote here, because I think it's something that will tie in with many things that I feel, in taking stock of my life, are worth sharing. Dear Irina, if that's his or her name, I don't really know. It seems like it's an anonymous letter to me. I have received both your emails, but was on vacation until this evening. Couldn't send emails out, and still can't do so. But I will contrive to get this letter to you somehow. I don't know what possible interest you could have in these things. In fact, I think you must be someone in SRF trying to prove something against me. Well, never mind. I am willing enough to answer you as best I can. It may be good for me, too, to take stock of my own life. I took my brotherhood vows from Diamata in 1955. They were formal vows, but were not clearly linked to any of the Shankaracharya branches. In 1958, the Shankaracharya of Gawardhan Math affirmed that the sannyas Dayat had given me was acceptable in the Swami order, and that he was empowered to make Swamis in the Giri order, even though his own order was Tirthi, his name was Bharati Krishna Tirtha, but the Giri order to which our guru belonged. I was myself present at that ceremony and was included in it. It took place in Sri Yukteswar's Samadhi Mandir, where he is buried, in Puri, in India. In 1985, for reasons that others may question but that I felt were right, I married Rasanna Golia in order to break down the barrier that continued to exist at Ananda between renunciates and householders at Ananda. At that time, I asked Diamata to dispense me of my brotherhood vows. When she did so, I said to her that occasion as I knelt before her, I am still a sannyasi at heart. Some years later, I simply couldn't stick to married life. It just wasn't for me. Rosanna wanted me to live for her, and I had to tell her my life was completely dedicated to serving Master. When I returned to India, I went to Rishikesh and sought some means of becoming reinstated as a Swami. A saint there told me, once a Swami, always a Swami. You can't be reinstated because you are still a Swami. It was true, and after one more effort, I simply accepted that verdict. But am I a Swami of the Giri order? I think so. I'm not wholly sure. Here are the points that I see as important in my mind. 1. I have never desired nor been attached to money. 2. I have absolutely no desire for alcohol or drugs. 3. Sex means nothing to me. 4. Fame means nothing to me. 5. Name equally means nothing. 6. Possessions mean nothing to me. I could lose and have on more than one occasion lost everything. Nothing belongs to me anyway. Pain and pleasure mean nothing to me. I've endured great physical pain many times and have simply diverted my mind from it. I'm equally indifferent to both suffering and delight, for I see both as simply masks for the eternal bliss. I live by Master's philosophy. What comes of itself, let it come. Public disgrace, which I have had to endure, I have endured calmly. Telling Divine Mother, if you want to demolish my whole life's work, I accept your will without flinching. It's not my work, it's yours. That many people have viewed themselves as my enemies, I accept as my karma. Satya Sai Baba said to me once, it's only selfishness and jealousy. 10. This body means nothing to me. I had a dream recently in which my enemies tried to burn me at the stake. I told myself in the dream, the pain will be temporary. I accept it calmly. My enemies, as can happen in dreams, were banqueting at a table nearby while the flames crept up around me. Friends of mine came and rescued me in time, but I felt no relief. Whatever God wanted, I simply accepted as his will. I can think of nothing on earth that I desire, nothing that I'm attached to. I can go from this earth happily any time. 10. Much of the time these days, I feel as though Master were looking at the world and enjoying it through my eyes. 11. Everywhere I look, I see God trying to break out of little human egos, and I feel overwhelming love for all of them. I wish I could find the key that would unlock all their prisons and free them in God. 12. I am conscious almost unceasingly of a delicious upward flow of bliss in my heart and consciousness. And when I was in Sorrento, I was surprised to see I would smile at everybody as I passed, and often they were just like that. So I remember somebody said to me, if people smile at me, I'll smile back. If they don't smile, I won't smile. I said, I always smile first. And when they didn't smile, I just decided, all right, I'll smile all the more. And finally, I began to see that by giving even more energy to them, even strangers would begin to smile and soften. I really have this longing to be able to find that key that will unlock their egos and help them to realize that they too are God. Remember Jesus when the Pharisees accused him for saying that you and your Father are one? He said, don't the scriptures say, ye are gods, all of you. Everybody is a sleeping God. And I can't help that feeling. I really feel no need to affirm my Swamihood. I'm trying to get out of all self-definitions. I have, however, in recent years, founded a new Swami order to which some 600 people now belong on various stages of the order. Its main purpose is contained in literature put out by Ananda. I don't have that song that I wanted to sing. And put out by Ananda. But I can encapsulate it with the simple statement that its primary purpose is to help people to rise above ego consciousness. Shankaracharya couldn't talk about that because he couldn't talk about matter not being real. He couldn't say that we're all part of one reality except as a dream, because in those days they were deep in Kali Yuga. Forms seemed to be solid realities. And I have known, unfortunately, many very arrogant swamis. I have known swamis who set themselves above people. Master himself, I remember deploring a time when he was in the Himalayas and seeing these people, because they were renunciates and householders would bring them food, and they would look down on the householders who brought them food for having to go out and earn food. This is ego. The main thing on the spiritual path is to give up this sense that I am different from you. We are all part of God's great dream. I hope our Nayaswami order, which embraces people in all religions, Catholics, Muslims, it doesn't matter. They're all welcome to join this Nayaswami order. Naya means new. New Swami order. And get rid of this paramount sin, which is the thought, simply the mistake of thinking that I and you are separate from each other. Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. Why? Because he is yourself. And so I've signed this letter with blessings and love, Nayaswami Kriyananda. Let me sing. I've sung this to you before, but it's a song that came to me recently. I was watching the movie Come to the Stable. It was done in 1949, a beautiful movie. But they had a melody there, and these words came to me. And I've sung it for many of you before, but many also will hear this song for the first time. And it really expresses my mood after my 63 years of discipleship, for which I am untiringly grateful. So let me close it by giving you my love, yes, and then singing you this song. Through a long and sleepless night, I've whispered your name. Through the pains and joys of life, I'm always the same. Tempt me no longer, this world's not for me. I have known all its charms. Fold me now in your arms, make me free. Lifetimes have passed, I've called out to you through hope and despair. Lifetimes I've known the goals that I sought awaited nowhere. Help me remember, there's one goal alone. All I am is you, all I am is yours. All I've done is yours, I'm your own.